So we're on Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. And the last thing that we learned was on the top of the Amud, something called Eschazek B'Beit Dina. And just to review the last thing that we learned, on Thursday, we established that a Shlish who's holding on to a Shtar is only to be believed that the shtar is parua, was already paid up, if the shtar hasn't reached the hands of Bezdin. Once the hands of Bezdin got onto the shtar and they were mekayim the shtar, that's called a maisa Bezdin, and the shlish cannot be believed, even with a migu, to undermine a maisa Bezdin. So the Gemara asked the following kasha, which was asked by Rava to Rav Nachman, about the case of a simpon, which means that the Malv and the Lover agreed to have a shtar written up that would indicate that the loan was repaid, and that shtar was given over to the hands of a shlish. And basically they were trusting the shlish to testify as to whether or not the shtar was parua, was paid up. And there were two edim that were signed on the simpon, and the Brisa says Yiskayim v'chosmav, that will verify the two signatures on this simpon, and that's going to authenticate the shtar and exclude any possibility of forgery, and the simpon is now valid. But what happens if there are no witnesses signed on the simpon, and all we have is a shlish, and the shlish is saying that this was a valid document and the malveh had authorized us to write me to write the shtar, or whoever wrote up the shtar, and we were appointed here to take care of the simpon. The simpon was deposited in our possession. So in such a case, the Brisa says the simpon is kosher, which means that the shlish is believed, and it would seem that the shlish is believed based on a migu, but the only problem is that the shtar is already huksak bebezdin, because the Brisa itself says that yiskayim b'chosmav, they would verify the signatures that are on the shtar. And yet the shalish is believed, tiyufta d'Rav Nachman tiyufta. That's the final line in the Gemara, that we have no defense for Rav Nachman against this Brisa. The Brisa clearly concludes that even after Maisa Bezdin, the shlish is believed to say that the shtar was parua. Then the last thing we discussed on Yom Chamishi was who has the rights to force the other Baldin to go to the local Bezdin, or to take it to a further Bezdin. And we said that, let's just review a little bit here so we don't forget what we studied. Just there's one more piece that actually we should review, and that is how do we paskin with regard to a case where the litigant, the defendant, wants to bring in new evidence after the verdict was already handed down by Bezdin. And we had a kind of a contradiction in Rabbi Yochanan from the Reisha to the Sefer, and finally the Gemara comes to the conclusion that according to Rav Yochanan, the only time that we would believe the defendant, right, the nitba, to say, after he's already admitted that he has no evidence, to bring in new evidence, is only a case where the witnesses showed up from Medina Sayam. Unexpectedly, they came back from a long journey. And in such a case, we believe the witness. Komakom Shoshan, fine. Okay. So that Bo Eden. Okay, now we're up to this discussion I mentioned before. Which one of the litigants could force which one to take the case to a higher court, which is in a different location? Is it the Malva who has rights to do so, the Lova? So let's just go over that last Gemara, and we'll take a look here on Daf Lamed Aleph Amin Beis Ki Osar Avdimi. So you'll see, if you see on the right side of Tosfos Divrei Masechta Itzayis,
yes.
So a little bit above that,
yeah.
You'll see a paragraph that a line that starts Hareza Mevi Raya Soser. And that last Harevi Mevi Soser, that's the case where the witnesses showed up from far off, and alternatively you have a Yosom, an orphan who found out about certain documents in his father's possession that he never knew about. Okay, fine. Ki Osar Avdimi. So Avdimi came from Eretz Yisrael with the following statement in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Hatokev Eschaver Bidin. It means that the Malve, the plaintiff, is pressing the Lova, the Nitba, to come in front of the Bezdin. The Echad Omar. Okay, so this could be the Malva. Let's go with that case. Although again, the language of Rav Dimi and the name of Rav Yochanan is very ambiguous. He says Echad. It sounds like either one of them. But for argument's sake, let's start with the following scenario. Let's say the Malva Omer Nodun Khan. I want to sue you locally, right here, in the local court. I don't want to schlep anywhere else. The Echad, but the Lova says, Nelech lemakom avad. We should go to a higher court where there are talmidei chachamim, and he feels that he'll get a better judgment there. In other words, the malve is not going to be—he's not going to be able to lie. He won't want to try to falsify the truth in front of the presence of such great scholars. That's called the makom avla. Is kofeno so? We can force the malve. V'yelech lemakom avad. And this is a very difficult halacha, because the malve, you know, he wants to get his money back. We don't know if he's telling the truth, but let's assume, for argument's sake, naively, we'll say he's telling the truth. Why does he want to schlep to the Beis Avad, you know, the Mokum Avad? It might be a long donkey's ride away. So Amar Lefanov, so Rebbe Lazar, who is one of the Talmidim, when he heard this statement of his Rebbe, he says to him, Rebbe, Misha Noshe Bechaver Mana, he has a claim of a mana. Is Yotzi Mana al Mana? He wanted to spend the exact same amount of money to schlep to a Bezdin. So what did he gain by this? You know, he might as well just give up on the Alva. Is that, that's you? Do you want to encourage a situation where the Malva will not, you know, will not want to lend money, because he knows if he lends money, the Lova is just going to drag it out and how should I say, schlep him to a higher Bezdin. He's going to have to spend so much money in travel expenses back and forth, and who knows what work he's going to lose. It just wasn't worth it for him. It's more than the Alva itself. Ella, but rather kofinos, so v'don b'iro. We should rather force the Lova, and he should be compelled and required to judge locally, and not to superimpose himself on the Malva. Itmar Nami, we learned thusly, you know, it's the same way. The Shmua was said in the name of a different Amora. Omer of Safra, Shnaim Shes Atzmu Bedin. Nisatsu mean the two litigants are sort of fighting it out. They're difficult one against the other. Echad Omer Nodim Khan, the Echad Omer Nelech Lokum Avad. This one says, let's do it local Bezdin, why not? And the other one says, no, we want to schlep you to a Mokum Avad. Is Kofinoso Vidon Biro. We're gonna force whoever it is to accept the judgment of the local judges. Now we're assuming that they both live in the same city. if they live in two different places, then the law is, the Ramah codifies this in Koshim Mishpat, HaToveh HaHolech Achar HaNitba, who's ever suing the other one, he has to go to the other one's town, you know, to sue him there. But if all things are equal and they both live in the same town, then according to this tradition of Rav Safra, they have to be judged locally. In other words, the one who wants to stay local has the right to compel the other one to subpoena him to the local court. V'im hutzrach davar lishol, and let's say the local bezin is made up of, you know, let's say ordinary people or low rate scholars. You know, they're not the greatest scholars, so they need guidance in deciding the final verdict. So what they'll do is lishol means they can always ask. They can always ask a question to the Beis Avad. What do? Kosvin v'sholchin. They write down their question. These are the local judges who might not have the expertise.
So you're sending a note to a higher court.
To the highest court if necessary. They can continue judging in their local court based on the receipt on the reply that they get from the Beis Nagodol. That's what it says over here. The Imamar, if the Baldin says to the Bezdin in the local court, he says, Kisvu Utnuli. And, you know, the litigant has a right to demand an explanation. It's not enough that you say, well, you know, you lost the case. He has a right to say, Almadantani. Almadantani means, what was the basis of your decision? So in this case, he says, Kisvu Utnuli. I want to have some sort of a document in my hands, and the document will record Meiza Tam Dantuni. Why did you say I have to pay? Is he has a right to do so? Kosvim Vinosinlo. The Bezdin has to comply with his wishes, and they have to commit to writing their decision. Why? Because he has the right to say, well, if you're being mechayvi, I want to go up to a Beis Avad, I want to show them your logic, your decision, and maybe they'll decide that you made a mistake. And then they're going to send back a message to force you to change your decision. And that's within his legal bounds. So, do you follow that Allah is trying to make a balance over here? On the one hand, we don't have to want to schlep a person to the Beis Avad. We want to allow the Tayyonim to have the local Tayyonim to have jurisdiction in such a way that if they cannot come to a decision on their own, they'll send message with a question to the high courts. But on the other hand, alright, you're forcing, let's say I'm going to say in the first person, you're forcing me to stay locally. Now you tell me I have to pay, or I lose my case against the lower. I want to be able to show to a higher court your decision. And that's sort of like a system of checks and balances. Because if I show the high court, they may come to the conclusion that there's a mistake over here. And they're going to send back a message to you guys, you know, to the local Bezdin, that you should rescind your psak. Now we're up to Yavama, but before we get to the Yavama case, I want to read to you an insight here from the Yad Ramah, and it all seems to be reflected in the Rambam. He says, "Af imu toin shu yochol listar esatam olahavi odraya ein mamtinin lo." Now, it's how far do we go in granting the right to the one who is determined to be chayav, right? That litigant. There's a boundary line. If let's say this litigant claims that he can bring in other proofs, or he can himself go up to the Beis Avad and come back with a logical argument against the Beis Din. You know, he's trying to delay. He wants to delay the decision of Beis Din. It's ein mamtinin lo. They don't have to wait for him. They can immediately hand down their verdict. He has to pay. And later on, if he brings some sort of a proof for example, he may bring back some sort of a document from a higher court or so forth and so on, then we'll reopen the case. But in the meantime, the local Beis Din doesn't have to be inhibited or harassed by the fact that this litigant is saying, well, I have reason to believe that you're falsifying what?
I used the word decision, but
that the decision is not a good decision. That there's more to it. There are other considerations. He has no power to do that. The Beis Din has to decide based on whatever evidence they have in the best way they can. And the Meiri says, "Imhu toin shu yochol listar satam." Kosvim v'nosin lo kodim shiyotzi menu mamun v'nosin lo zman listars tamehem. So I'm not 100% sure, but I think what the Meiri might be saying here is that if the litigant claims he has halachic, legally valid reasons or logical, compelling reasons to undermine their decision, then we can give him a little bit more time. It doesn't say exactly how much time to substantiate his claim. But I'm not sure what the Meiri means when he says kosu v'nosin lo kodim shiyotzi mimenu mamon. I don't know what he means by kosu v'nosin lo. I think perhaps what the Meiri is saying is that before the final decision is actually implemented and the local Beis Din will force the litigant to pay, they'll give him a document in this interim period, and once the litigant has that document, he feels comfortable, secure. He feels like he has some sort of a proof in his pocket that he was unjustly forced to pay. So I think the difference between the Meiri and the Rishonim we mentioned earlier, the Amraman, the Rambam, is that the other Rishonim say, let's just go ahead with the decision, we're going to implement it, we're going to force him to pay, and we'll write him a shtar afterwards, and he can take that shtar, that document, up to a high court and see how he fares in a high court. The Meiri, I think, disagrees, and he says, no, the litigant has a right to demand the writing of this document before he pays a penny. He wants to know, he has to have the security that I'm not going to pay unless I get this document in which you, the judges, tell me or commit to writing exactly on what basis you came to your decision that I have to pay. So that now the litigant has that security. He's got, like, you know, a weapon in his pocket, so to speak. He can go up to the higher courts with that document. Now we get to the case of Yevamah. Now here's the deal. A man dies, leaving his wife he doesn't have any children, right? He didn't have any children, and he has a brother. So now she falls for Yibam. Now, the brother, who's called the Yavam, has the option of giving her what's called Chalitza. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen Chalitza?
I've heard it. I've seen the show. Never seen the
shoe. Oh, I don't know how you saw the shoe. They don't usually show it around. But anyway.
It's in a museum, so, right?
Ah, in a museum. Interesting. But in any event, a number of times I witnessed Chalitza. And it's a very emotional kind of experience. Yeah. Because when, you know, the parasha that's read over here, where she, so to speak, accuses him of not being interested in Lahakim Shem Liochiv Hames. Very Mod Meragesh. Anyway. So the question here is the following. Let's say the Yavam lives in Oshkosh and she lives on the other side of the world. Who has to come to whom? A very similar question to what we had before in terms of forcing one litigant to schlep to a high court. So the statement here that we have from Rabbi Safra says, Hayavama olecha sachar Yavam, and she needs the Yibum or the Chalitz in this case. So she has to go to the Beis Din of his city. She'll have to pack her bags and get on a plane. I'm hoping she's not going to Asia, but anyway, she has to go there. Latira, so that she can get a chalitza. He doesn't have to move from the spot. She has to go to him. Now there's no explanation here for this for this halacha, but my assumption is that whoever needs, you know, the other one more, like the tovea who's suing the nitba, you know, what was the language here? Kofenoso v'don v'iro, that you can't force the lova to schlep all the way. You want to be tovea him, you know, you're the one who's eager to get money out of him, so he doesn't have to schlep where you want to schlep him. You have to, and that's what we said before in the name of the Ramah, that, just one second, where was the Ramah? That if they live in the, just where, now I lost it, where is it? It was on the previous page. No, it's definitely on this page. How could I miss it? Just one second. Oh, here it is. Shneim dor makom. Kashem dorim shneim makom. Oh, here is the Ramah. Kashem dorim hei b'shneim makomos. Right, the malv and the lova, the tovea and the nitva live in two different places. A tovea holech achar nitva. Right, you want to be tovea someone, you have to go to his court, to his local address, you know, to be tovea. Same thing here, the Yavama needs the Yivum, or the Chalitza in this case.
It sounds like she's the one that wants to get married to somebody else. It's right. Not his doing, he's not correct. Saying no. She's
so in that sense, she's being the tovea, she's demanding
it's
something from
marriage.
Him.
This is a temporary relationship, it's not a
Again, she can't get married until she gets chalitza.
Oh, I see.
So, right, so
oh,
she needs the chalitza very desperately.
Yeah.
So he's up in Tzvat, yeah. You know, so she has to schlep up to Tzvat.
I see. Yeah.
Ad kama. So the Gemara thinks that there's a limit. You don't have to take the Yavama and force her to go all the way across the seas to get the chalitza from the Yavam. There must be some sort of limit as to how far you can schlep her. Omar Rabbi Ami, afilu mitveria letzipori. So even if she will have to go from Tveria to Tzipori, now here, Rashi has a little bit of a curveball here. Take a look at Rashi, afilu Mitveria. Can you find that, Rashi? It's about halfway down the page.
Yes.
Afilu mitveria litzipori. The afal pi she yeshivas tveria, meaning the bezdin in Tveria, gedola mishel tzipori. So she's really going to a lower court.
Yeah.
Halach achrov litzipori, but he, the yavam, is in Tzipori. Now you would have thought, well, maybe she has to schlep out to his local town, assuming that the bezdin in his local town is at least on the same level as her bezdin, if not greater. But now we're saying the exact opposite. That's how Rashi is learning afilu mitzipori mitveri litzipori, meaning that despite the fact that the whole local bezdin is Tveria, I guess is like a center, an urban center of Jewish life,
sure.
And they had the best, you know, most advanced dayanim and great dayanim sitting on the bezdin. So in that case, let him schlep from Tzipori to her, to Tveria, to be in the higher bezdin. No, even in such a case, she doesn't have the right to subpoena him to make the schlep and show up in Tveria. She has to pack her bags and go to Tzipori,
to
a lower court. But again, the Gemara doesn't address my question, which you have to travel all over the world. Omar Rav Kahana, my kra. What is the source in the Torah to prove that Yavama has to go find the Yavam? So the Gemara is not willing to apply the rule that we saw in the Ramah that the Tovea Halach Achar Nitva. Because in this case there's a mitzvah of Yivum, and the Yavam is also responsible to fulfill his obligation. If he doesn't want to do Yivum, then he has to perform Chalitza. So we need a Pasuk here. What's the Pasuk? Again, we're in Parshas Ki Teitzeh, the Parsha of Yivum. It says Vekaru lo zikne iro. And the pasuk says the local elders of his city will call out to him, and they'll ask him to recite, you know, to give chalitza. Velo, it doesn't say zikne ira, that we're in her city. It says the elders are here who are presiding over this chalitza in his city. So it seems that she has to go to his city in order to receive the chalitza.
But it's his mitzvah. It's his obligation. It's not hers, obviously.
Right, but she needs it. So, you know, if not for this pasuk, we would really be in a bind. We wouldn't know exactly how to balance. On the one hand, she needs the chalitza. She's the tovea. She has to go to him. On the other hand, he has an obligation of yibum. And if he doesn't want to fulfill that obligation, then he has to give her chalitza.
So we presume that he has already made known his refusal to marry her.
Well, that has to do with the Gemara of Abaye. Abaye, in Masechta Yevamos, says that today we don't encourage yibum. We go for chalitza. Now I'm assuming that our sugi Rav, who is a Rav Safra, correct?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Maybe it's a presumption on my part. I'm being a little bit chutzpahdik, but I was assuming that Rav Safra is already. I mean, historically, I think he's before Abaye, but nevertheless, Abaye may have formalized the halacha that we go for chalitz instead of yibum, but it was already much even. In generations way, way before, earlier than Abaye, was already the accepted practice that we did away with chalitza. Well, I'm sorry, did away with yibum. And the reason for that is Gemara says that yibum is a mitzvah that you can only fulfill if you have pure kavanos. You know, it's very hard to reach that level. So how do we get out of this balancing here? You know, she has to come to him because she desperately needs chalitza to get married. He, on the other hand, has the obligation, he has responsibility. So the Gemara says we have to read the Pasuk. And the Pasuk went out of its way to say Iro, instead of Ira, his city. I would call this Agzeres HaKosuv, meaning we learn it from a Pasuk. You can rack your brains, you can write the moral in the Vuchim, you know, write the Rambam, it's a guide to the perplexed, and come up with your own explanations for it, whatever you like. But the bottom line is, the law is the law, because it's derived from scriptures, you know, and you can't play around with that. The only question I have is, are there any circumstances in which it becomes nearly impossible for her to get to him? Not sure what he's trying to point out here. Oh, that's, I'm sorry, that was premature. Now we're going back to the question of the two litigants. One wants to go to the higher court. So the final bottom line is, says Amemar, Kofin Oso, V'yelech L'mokom Avad.
Higher court.
So this is a little bit different than what we've been saying until now. We were saying that the person who's local has a right to say, look, we have a local bezdin, I'm not going to schlep. And especially the Balva doesn't want to spend money when he's trying to get his loan back, loan repay. But nevertheless, Amemar claims that, you know what, the main goal is to get justice, you know, get a real just decision. And if that means going to a higher court, then each litigant, any litigant, has the right to demand that. Only Rav Ash, Rav Ashi la Meimar, va'amar Rav Elazar kofin oso v'don be'iro. What are you doing with Rav Elazar's statement, who says that we stay local? No one can force him to go schlep. So Gemara answers, Hani mili hecha de kamrele lova l'malva. That's only in a case where the lova says to the malva that we should go to the Beis Havad. And that's when Rabbi Eliezer says that the lova has to agree to be judged locally. Avala malve, but if the malve demands that we go to a higher court, then we give the rights to the malve to force the lova to schlep to the higher court. Why? Because of a pasuk in Mishlei. The pasuk in Mishlei says, "Eved lova lish malve." See, I'm not exactly clear before we get to this pasuk. Do we have absolute clear evidence that there was a loan to begin with? I mean, what if the lover denies that there was ever a loan? I'm assuming there was some, let's call it preliminary, I don't know what to call it, a hearing. Did you ever hear that? You know, where they have a hearing before the actual case?
Yeah, here there's a footnote that says that there is proof. It says this Old Hill's truth, the creditors claim it based on solid evidence, as his witnesses, so he has to present the evidence to the local court, which coerces the defendant to travel. So in other words, he has to make his case that this is a valid...
He meaning who? The Malvin? Is he talking about the Malvin, the lender?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that makes sense. That's what I wanted to say. I didn't know about that footnote. It would seem to make sense that we've at least passed that first level. We know that a loan took place. If the loan is saying the whole thing is malarkey, and the whole thing was a fabricated truth, then why are you forcing the loan to go to schlep to a mukum to the base of Havad based on the demand of the malva when who puts the malva into the driver's seat? So there must be some sort of document or maybe even admission on the part of the loan that there was a loan at some point in time. That gives the malva a status, an unquestionable status. And now we can apply the pasuk in Mishle. What is the result of that status of the malva? How far does it go? Eved lova liish malva. The lova has a shibud, which means he's lean. That like he has a chov. He has an obligation to pay the malva. Now he wants to prove that he already paid the malva. That's the burden of proof is on him at this point. And that's when Amemar said that Kofer Soviel Chumakom Havla, that the malva has a right to demand from his eved, in quotation marks, the lova, that he follow him and they schlepped to the base Havad. And Rabbi Elazar the Gemara says doesn't deny that. When Rabbi Elazar says kofen oso v'don b'iro, he's talking about a case where the lova says to the malva, I want to be judged. Just one second. Let me get this straight. If the lova says to the malva, let's go to the base Havad. Just one second. So why don't we apply? So that's it. So Rav Lozer says no, that the lova, but basically it comes out the way the Gemara is interpreting Rav Lozer, together with the statement of Amemar, the lova is always on the, he gets the short end. What do I mean he gets the short end? Because if the lova says to the malva, let's go to the Beis Havad, no, kofen oso vidun v'iro, so the lova loses out. And in the flip case where the malva says, let's go to the Beis Havad, once again, the lova loses out, and the malva has rights to force the lova to schlep to the Beis Havad. And all this is based on the pasuk Eved lova liish malva. But again, all this is assuming that we know that there was alva, that the malva has that status. Oh, here's what you were saying. I think he says din zeh hu rak kishiyesh la tovei edim oraya. He starts with Aiden. So I think that means that he's already established his status as a malva. Avalim baba tainere kanit, ein mechaivin as a niton latzeis klal me'iro. You know, if a guy drums up some sort of claim that so-and-so owes money and we got to go to the Beis Havad, we're not going to force this so-and-so to go to the Beis Havad. That's what's going on over here. Okay. Okay, so we mentioned that the Yavama, she has to go to the Yavam, even from Tveria to Tzipori. And here the Gemara tells a story. Sholchu Lei, the Bezdin in Tveria, sent a message to Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva was the Av Bezdin in Bavel. So this is a message that's coming from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. And he says the following: Lidziv le kibas kvar basya. Now, the word Lidziv comes from the Shoresh Ziv. Ziv is the radiance of someone's countenance. And they compared the countenance of Mar Ukva when they sent this letter to that of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is called Bar, the son of Vasya. And Moshe Rabbeinu had a beautiful countenance, and the Torah says that his countenance was so beautiful that at some point the people couldn't even look at his face, he had to cover it. Now Moshe, interestingly, is called Ben Basio, Bar Basio, but that's not really true, because his mother's name was Yocheved, but it was Basia who somehow brought him up. You know, she raised him in the house of her father Paro. And it seems that Moshe Rabbeinu had Panav Karnim Karnehot. There was a certain shine, a radiance that came from Moshe's countenance. The Torah says in Shmos Lamedalit Pasuk Chav Tes, the Karni or Ponav. Again, the Goyim misinterpreted. They thought he had horns, right? Now, there's another Girsa in Agamar that calls Moshe Rabbeinu Bas Bar Bisya, which means he's the Ben of a Bias. Well, the bias here is referring to the bias of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the Pasuk says in Balosk, it says, B'chol Beisi Nemanhu. In any event, Mar Ukva's face, his countenance, was similar, as they're comparing it to that of Moshe Rabbeinu. Mar Ukva was a great scholar, and about a scholar, that the Pasuk says in Koheles, Chochmas Odom Toyer Ponom, that if a person is very bright, he's very advanced, he's a Chocham, then his face will light up. And the Yad Ramah writes that Mar Ukva was a great tzaddik, and that's how he merited this radiant countenance. Others say that Mar Ukva was a Baal Tshuva, and at one point, I'm not sure exactly when this happened, this was, I think, before he became Baal Tshuva, I'm not sure, let me read to you. He says the following: Pam achas nosan eno beishes ishi, was attracted to a married woman, ad she nimok mirov ava. He was so much in love with her that he was just disintegrating. He was falling apart. He experienced what's called timtum libo, and he got sick. Liachar zman he nitzrichol lavos lilvos mimeno, and she needed desperately a loan from him. And, you know, she, for the sake of getting this loan, she decided to have this relationship with him, this adultery relationship. But he overcame his desire. And he sent her away with peace, probably gave her a loan. And he was healed from his sickness, which was a result of his desire to have a relationship with her. Umeyaz kshay yotze l'shuk, when he went out into the marketplace, hayroim ner min hashamayim dolok al rosho. There was some sort of a light that came from the heavens and lit up his head. Now, it could be the goyim took a lot of that from us. Anyway, al shem karulo. And that's why they said that his countenance was that of Moshe Rabbeinu. So I'm a little bit confused, but I'm not sure did this happen. I think it must have happened after he became Baal Tshuva. That's what I'm thinking. Anyway, in Masechta Shabbos, he's called Natan Ditzutzisa. Nutzitsa are Nitzotzos Eish. Those are sparks of from the flame that shoot out. Hamalach poshad es yado v'kibel es tshuvaso, o shamalach ochazo v'tzitzis rosho. So that we'd have to look up. But I remember Rav Vadi Yosef used to, when he would write a tshuva, he would very often use this kind of phrase to address with great kovod, you know, the person, the rabbi he was writing the tshuva to. Anyway, then they would start the letter by saying shalom. right? Shalom means shalom. Ukva and Habavli, they called her the Bavli because, again, they were writing this from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. And one second. Kval Kadama.
Kadmon.
Right. Sa'ak Bifanenu. So I know now I'm getting the impression that it was Mar Ukfa who's saying Sholchu Le, they sent the letter from Tveria to Mar Ukfa. Okay. And Ukfa na Bavli Kaval Kadmona. So I don't understand who's standing in front of who. It's a little confusing to me. Adam Zeh, for me, Bavel Eretz Yisrael, Pinkol Shema Bavli. You know what? I think, let's see if the sugya is going to bear me out, that Ukvan is the name of a person. Not Mar Ukva. I mean, it sounds a little bit similar. So, I think they're two different people. So Mar Ukva is the recipient of this letter, and he's the Gadol in Bavel, and they're talking about they're telling Mar Ukva a story about a person by the name of Ukvan, who was a Bavli, and he came in front of us, and he cried out. Right, Kaval means he protested or he cried out in our presence. Well, let's see what he cried out. So this is Ukvan Abavli. I guess he came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, and now the judges in Eretz Yisrael want to get the opinion of Mar Ukva. Yirmiya Achi Hevir Olai Es Haderech, which is an idiomatic phrase for meaning that he cheated me. The Imru Lo, you should tell Yirmiya Shebibavel, she is pious im Ukvan. Now I'm not sure what that means, but they were imploring Mar Ukva to somehow make peace between Yirmiya and his brother Ukvan, because Ukvan was claiming that Yirmiya's brother was cheating him. So Imrulo, go tell Yirmiya and Bavel, because again, both Ukva, well, I'm not sure exactly where Ukvan is now, but he used to be in Bavel anyway, and Yirmiya's in Bavel, so Mar Ukva, who's the Gadol in Bavel, maybe he can make peace between the two. So he was being asked by the Beis Din in Tveria to gather together this fellow named Yirmiya, together with his brother Ukvan, and they should do a pius. Pius means some sort of pacification,
reconciliation.
Heisi uhu. And somehow they forced him to show up. The Yira Panenu Bitveria. It seems now I'm beginning to think that maybe Ukvan, the brother of Yirmiya, is in Tveria. And he's yelling and screaming about his brother who's in Bavel, and his brother is cheating him. So basically what was being sent to Mar Ukva is some way to impose or to enforce that Yirmiya should show up in the Beis Din, and then somehow force him the Yeruponenu Bitveria. I don't know exactly how they're going to be able to, engineer this or orchestrate this, but somehow to force Yirmiya, pressure him, to come in front of the Beis Din in Tveria. And we're going to try to see what's going on here. Did he really cheat money? Did he steal money from his brother or something? Some scandal of that sort. So the Gemara asks the question the following. Hagufa Kasha. There's something difficult to understand in the very letter that they sent to Mar Ukva. Amrit, you said Imrulo. right? The lashon of the text was Imrulo, meaning tell Yirmiya in Bavel to show up here in Tveria. Alma, what we see from that is that the Dayanim in Tveria telling Mar Ukva Dainuhu Atun that you must call him into the Bezdin, which implies that you're gonna adjudicate the case in Bezdin. You're going to, but then it says Hesiu v'yirapanenu de Tveria, which means implore him or pressure him to show up in front of us in Tveria. Alma means Shadru Hacha. We locally in Tveria will judge Yirmiya. So where's the judgment of Yirmiya? The Gemara thinks that the language of Imrulo implies that the judgment of Yirmiya would take place in Bavel, under the jurisdiction of Mar Ukva, but yet they said send them back to Tveria. Elahachi Kamar. Here's how we can make some, you know, discover the integrity of this letter. Imrule, tell Yirmiya that he should be willing to reconcile his differences with Ukvan, which means Dainu Atun, you should judge it there in Bavel. Ve'ilo, and if he refuses to accept you as his court, as his judges, and he insists on going to a higher court, well, we in Tveria are the higher court. It's Asiyu v'yirupanei v'Tveria. So this is the first answer of the Gemara. The Gemara is going to offer another answer, but according to the first answer, really the letter is telling Mar Ukva that if he can get away with it there and complete the judgment there locally in Bavel, that's the way to go. But in this case, if the litigant insists that he wants to take it to a high court, then send him to us in Tveria. Again, where Ukvan is located, I think he's in Tveria, because it says in the lashon of the text of this Igeris, it says Kaval Kadomina. Kadama. I don't know. I have a comma. It's under the kuf. That's why I can't see. You have a pasach under the.
No, I have no vowels.
No, you don't have any vowels. No, I'm just trying to read it the way he has. Yeah, okay. We're going to go over this over and over again every time.
Yeah.
Okay, and anyway, that's what's going on over here. Rav Ashi Omar, Dine Knossos Havu, that the litigation here between the two brothers, between Ukvan and Yirmiya, was not over some monetary case, but rather over some sort of a knas. You know, let's say, for example, there was a claim of half a nezik for a shartam, which if we say it's a knas, or kefel and a gana, is therefore bebavel lo dainu dine knasos. You need smuchim ish mi pi ish for the judges to decide in Dine Knossos. And in Bavel, they don't have the jurisdiction, the power, to judge in Knossos. We need Smuchin for Knossos. And that's based on a Gemara that we learned earlier, back on Daf Gimel. It says Elohim, in the Parsha that we read yesterday in Shul, it says that you need Dayonim Smuchim. And Elohim goes back to all the dinim that are in that parasha. Amongst them are Dine Knossos. So therefore, you cannot judge this case with Yirmiya and Mar Ukva and Ukvan in Bavel. So therefore, what the judges in Tveria are asking is that they force Yirmiya to come in front of the Beis Din in Tveria, because in Beis Din in Tveria and Eretz Yisrael, they have the authority to issue a decision on knas. So now we don't understand, what does it mean imru lo? It sounds like, as the Gemara originally understood it, that Mar Ukva in Bavel should judge the case. What was that all about? Kidei lachlo kovilu Mar Ukva. Notice they didn't want to tell Mar Ukva, you got to send him to us, as if to say, well, you don't have the, you know, you don't have the authority to judge the case, which is true. He didn't have the authority because it was a knas in Bava. But in order to give him a certain sense of kavod, they said imru lo, you know, as if to say, you will judge the case. And here he quotes the Meiri. He says, derech talmidei chachamim lechavel es chavreihem apedor sheyadu lehem shein chavreihem yicholim lekavel kegon hacha shelo hayim ar ukva yachol lodun dini knosos. So that's the milo or the cover that they wanted to give. So hajan alecha ze bore.
Why would they have that case there? Because it runs contrary to a lot of what we learned, and it seems to come to no real conclusion.
Well, I would say the following, that in the first understanding, Gemara is saying that it was a dini mominus case. He really had a claim, let's call him Ukvan, had a claim to his brother Yirmiya that he had cheated him.
Right.
And therefore, you know, ideally, the Beis Din in Tveri would love for the, you know, let the Beis Din in Bavel take this headache upon themselves. But what they implied was that if you see that you're meeting up with resistance, because we always say the Tovea has to go after the Nitba, and the Tovea is here in Tveria, and the Nitba is all the way in Bavel, so the Nitba doesn't want to schlep to Eretz Yisrael. But if the Nitba says, I want to go to the Beis Avad, so send them over to us. And the second explanation is that, no, wait a second, Rav Ashi says the case was Dinei Knossos, which means that there was never even a Hava Mina that Mar Ukva in Bavel could judge this case. So it's, but instead of saying straight away, you know, send them to us in Tveria, they gave him a certain amount of respect. But as far as I know, the Gemara is not changing its mind. So Rav Osai, what I'd like to do now is at least start the next Mishnah, the next Perek. But I would like to discuss with you whether or not. You know, Sanhedrin's a massive Masechta. I'm wondering, what we might decide in terms of where we go from here. But in the meantime, let's take a look at the fourth parak. Echad dinei momenos, the echad dinei nefashos, bedrisha v'chakira. So that when witnesses come to testify, whether it's a monetary case or it's a capital case, then we investigate them with drishos and chakiros. Shenemar, because it says in Dvarim, I'll read the beginning of the pasuk. The pasuk says, well, actually, there are two different psukim in two different parts, but one pasuk says v'darashta v'chakarta v'shalta heitev, which is the mandate given to the dayonim that they have to be dorish v'choker, they have to interrogate the eidim thoroughly. And even if that pasuk, which is in Dvarim Yud Gimel, is in the context of a capital case, but nevertheless we derive dine momenos, monetary law, by analogy to capital cases, because Shenema, the Pasuk says in Vayikra, Perek of Dalet, it says, Mishpat Echad Yielachem. And Mishpat Echad means one uniform standard of judgment, and whatever requirements apply in dine nefashos, we superimpose them and apply them in dini momentus as well. So at this point, again, we're going to see later on that Rabbana made a takana, and they relieved, or shall we say, lowered the demands, the standards for dini momentus. But right now we're going to the doraisa level, and on a Torah level, the same demands and requirements for investigating Aden that apply in capital cases apply also in monetary cases. But then the Mishnah asks, Ma bein dini momenos l'dini nefashos? So then, at the end of the day, if you're saying that the standards of Eidus and how we accept Eidus are the same, what is the difference between dini momenos and dini nefashos? And the Mishnah gives the answer, and the Gemara is going to question why we need this Mishnah, because basically this is a repeat of what we know from the past. But it says dini momenos bishlosha v'dini nefashos b'yesrim u'shlosha. So as far as the number of the judges that make up the court, in the case of monetary law all we need is 3, in the case of capital we need 23. Now here's another difference between monetary cases and capital cases. Bedine Momenos, poschim, when they start the deliberations, is bein l'schus u'bein l'chova. They can go either way. You know, it's, let's say they have certain evidence in favor of the malve, which would be a chova to the nitva, to the lova, and they could start with that, which is called l'chova. But bedini nefashos poschin l'schus v'ein poschin l'chova. The first evidence that we allow into Bezdin is going to be to the defense of the accused. We don't start, because the beginning of the Bezdin, it already like puts a certain complexion on the hemshik, on the dinu dvarim. So in the case of the nefashos, where the Torah says v'shaftu eid v'tzileid, that we have to go out of our way to try to save the life of the accused, therefore we want to start with schus. So again, there's a lot to discuss here on this Mishnah. I'm just mentioning, you know, the, shall I say, the surface level interpretation of this Mishnah. Now we get to another distinction between Momenos and Nefashos. Dini Momenos, let's say there is a division amongst the judges, is Matin al Piechad. All we need is one, the majority of one. So if you have two out of three, that's enough to issue a decision. And that works bein l'schus u'bein l'chova. It doesn't matter which way we're going, whether we're forcing the plaintiff to the defendant to pay, or we're alleviating him of his obligation. But bedini nefashos matin al pi echad l'schus, but al pi shnayim l'chova. That if we want to condemn the person to death, we need a majority of two. It's not enough to get a majority of one. So if we start with 23 judges for a capital case, then you would need, let's say, 13 against 10. Right? 13 against 10 would be, how much would be 23? And then you have already a majority of two. Actually, you'd have a majority of three. So we need always a margin of a majority of two in order to condemn a person to death. Right, but to acquit him, all we need would be 12 against 11, correct? All we need is a one single judge that would tip the scale in favor of acquitting the accused, and the Gemara is going to derive all this from Psuki. Next distinction. Bedini Momenos machzirim bein l'schus bein l'chova. If new evidence comes into the court subsequent to the final decision, it doesn't matter whether this new evidence is coming to say that so and so has to pay, or so and so that you said has to pay does not have to pay, we'll accept the new evidence. But bedini nefashos, if there was already a decision, machzirin l'schus v'ein machzirin l'chova, if new evidence comes in to condemn the person, the accused person who has been acquitted, we will not accept new evidence l'chova. But if on the other hand there's new evidence which is l'schus, that means that we have new information that might allow us to take him off the hook, how do you say, to free him from his, to acquit him, then we'll accept that new evidence. V'dini momenos hakol melamdim schus v'chova. Anyone of the dayonim, even if, let's say, amongst the dayonim there are certain apprentices, you know, there are certain talmidim, there are students who have not yet officially been appointed to the Bezdin, but they want to have something to say. So you have the three judges, but now you have a committee of students, and they think that they have something to say to the judges, and they want to say something l'schus or l'chova. That's fine, even though they're not officially judges. But bedini nefashos, with regard to dini nefashos, is hakol melamdim schus v'ein hakol melamdim chova. If one of these students wants to say, well, I think that he's guilty for the following reason, then we silence him, we don't listen to him, only if he's coming to establish that the person has a schus. So this is where we want to take a break here.